Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, coming live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country, as BBM Bumbadrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Israeli Service. You can have your saver. Call us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. I'd like to catch up with now with Professor Daryl Higgins, ACU Institute of Child Protection, and talking about child protection, education and health services failing to provide culturally safe responses to First Nations children experiencing domestic and family violence, new research has found. On the line, Professor Daryl, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks, Trevor, and lovely to coming to you from Wadawurrung country down here in Southwest Victoria, and I'd like to pay my respects to elders past, present and emerging.
Beautiful. Thank you for the acknowledgement and big shout out to the mob there. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Look, a very important conversation. Child protection, education and health services failing to provide culturally safe responses to First Nations children experiencing domestic and family violence, new research has found. So a lot of work is going to be done in this area, yes?
Absolutely. Look, and I was delighted to be part of a team working with actually a group of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander researchers coordinated by QUATSIP, the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Child Protection Peak up in Queensland, in partnership with ANROS, the funding body, Australia's National Research Organisation on Women's Safety, and ourselves at Australian Catholic University.
Good, fantastic. So in regard to the failure that they're providing culturally safe responses to First Nations children experiencing domestic and family violence and research failure, what do we need to do here? And they say it takes a community to raise a child. So all departments got to be at the table, front and centre, to move forward.
Absolutely. And what we know is that domestic and family violence is one of those kind of sleeper issues that often we forget about when it comes to the issue of children and their safety and well-being. And yet we know that it's one of the very frequent experiences of children who are coming to the attention of statutory child protection services. But the real gap that we'd identified with our earlier research was the absence of a practice framework to really guide the work that child protection-oriented staff, either within a statutory child protection service or, more importantly, even within an Aboriginal community-controlled organisation that's wanting to work with families, work with children who are exposed to domestic or family violence.
Exactly. And Professor Daryl, when we're talking about working with our children, well, we know the number one ingredient is black on black. You know, and having our black people working with our black children, that's goes without saying. But also, it creates that that culturally safe response to looking after our children in that space. Yes,
absolutely. And that's one of the really exciting things about this project was that it was led not only by that peak body for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Child Protection Services in Queensland, but they had this fantastic process of engaging community research teams from across regional and remote Queensland. And so it was just a delight to be able to be part of that kind of process of elevating First Nations voices to find community-led solutions for healing and recovery for children.
Look, surveys, research, also very important. What happens now that we've found this information? Where do we go from here, Professor? Who do we take this information to get some traction and some action in regard to this space?
Yeah, look, Trevor, it's a great question, and I think there's two areas. One is we need to make sure that we are resourcing and prioritising First Nations-led approaches. And so that means, first of all, prioritising that cases relating to child protection issues for First Nations children are in fact being led by and managed by community-led organisations. So that's kind of the first thing. But then the second thing is, and what is it that they need to be doing? And so this is really about having a research-informed, practice model that can help drive what it is that those Aboriginal community-controlled organisations can do on the ground to respond to what we know is the vast over-representation of First Nations children within the child protection system, and the very common feature of those children who are coming to the attention of the statutory system, and that is exposure to family violence.
So here we have, you could say, another closing the gap situation.
Absolutely, and closing the gap through the use of culturally sensitive and evidence-based practices. And what I love about this project is not only that it was led by First Nations community researchers, but that it was actually about trying to look at the evidence that could be led into a new way of working with children across the community, you know, that's holistic, that's culturally sensitive. And so I was really proud to be able to support and be part of this exciting project to really drive, I suppose, a reform agenda so that we're not just allowing children to kind of cycle through a system that's culturally unsafe, that's not responsive to community needs, and just continues the cycle of disadvantage that we know has continued on for far too long.
Look, and it's about building a strong foundation for our young ones to build their future on. So it is a team effort. Like I said, it takes a community to raise a child. So we are all in this together, are we not, Professor?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think the important thing about Out of Work was the focus that we put on identifying within the framework kind of the key elements of healing. So it's a healing-oriented and culturally strong model. So, you know, different themes related to supporting safety, supporting strong cultural identity, working with family and community, having strong deadly relationships and really strengthening spirits. And so that was really about addressing the needs of the child, the family and the community, taking a trauma-informed lens, looking at the strengths of the child, of their community, and prioritising their voice.
Yes, exactly. Look, a beautiful yarn. Thank you so very much. A very important yarn. A big shout out to everybody involved, Child Protection Peak, ENROS, as well as QUATSIP and also ACU. Thank you for your yarn, Professor. Please do keep in touch and we'll yarn soon.
My pleasure. Thanks, Trevor.
Bye-bye. A beautiful yarn, deadly yarn there, Professor Daryl Higgins, ACU Institute of Child Protection, and talking about the Child Protection Education and Health Services failing to provide culturally safe responses to First Nation children experiencing domestic and family violence. New research has found. And so there it is. We need to fix that space and protect our children. Have your saying yarn up strong. Add to the conversation here, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
Where you from, my brother? I come from there, from another side. Me you call a Kungai, from Yoruba where my people reside.
Yeah, the deadly voice, Barry Cedric, BC2 Deadly, my brother. Where you from, my brother, is named that deadly track. And big shout out to the Yarrabain. And that's a big shout out to all of Mob Dead Yarrabah. But at Yarrabain is Barry Cedric. And I think he's based back here, or I don't know if he's down there at Woorabinda. But yeah, where you at, my brother? Big shout out. Your daily program, National Talk Black. Have you say, yarn up strong, 1-800-422-416. Yarn with the bully on here, Trevor Tim 20, Trevor Murray from the Curry. Coming live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country. BBM Bumbadrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Israeli Service. Yarn up strong, new mob. And taking you right through to 12 noon Queensland time. And a big shout out to First Nation Radio Stations across this deadly country. All you deadly mob out there, a deadly black network. Yarn up strong, new mob.
want to pay tribute to all the women across this land. We want to say thank you. It's because of you we can. You raised us from babies to the people we are today. The women before us, they have paved the way. Because of her we can. She left her foot.
Because of her, we can. That's Natasha Aldridge, and big shout out to all our beautiful women out there, our mothers, our sisters, our grandmothers, our aunties. One love you, mob, and keep us alive and keep us going strong. Thank you very much. And all you deadly brothers out there, respect our beautiful sisters in our lives. Have you saying Yarn Up Strong? National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416. Going to catch up with Yarn. We've got Tony Gibbs on the line. Tony, very good morning. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, Radio Brother.
How you going? Hey.
You don't want
to
know.
Oh, talk to me, brother. Talk to me.
I'm calling up mostly from a couple of brother-in-laws that under a lot of stress with the homeless thing that was the headline in the news and on the TV and everywhere. Mm. Had a couple of brothers camping down near the Green Patch. You can't get into it. It's been closed. And they've been down there, and the police have come down and told them to move and said that they were on World Heritage area. It's not a World Heritage area, and they were going to get a $3,000 fine. And that was supposed to happen this morning. I saw them on Friday.
Were they TOs, Tony?
Well, their goals were Murray, you know. Oh. I mean, you're not allowed to live in Goldsborough. There's 20 years native tribal, and you're allowed to camp for 3 days legally, and there's all kinds of clan difficulties and stuff up there. You know, our family camp was taking over.
Mm. And when you look at the cost of rentals going through the roof, and people are streaming out for accommodation, so a First Nation person in Struggle Street would go back on country. And if that's their country, it's sad, isn't it? They've got to be hunted out.
You're going to try and hunt them out. And, you know, they said it's World Heritage. It's Murray Heritage. It's the Mulgrave River, and they're as close to it as they can be. Mm. You know, I haven't been able to continue that protest at the Green Patch without a car, and my other Falcon is deregistered now, and I'm working on another little car, and I've got money for tyres, and the fella that does the tyres broke his arm, and God, it's never ending. But these brothers are in distress now, and people think that there's just nothing down the river, but they're watching that river, what's going on, and they're telling me there's, you know, they're getting ready to take the water from the Mulgrave River, and they might dam something there.
Mm.
I mean, so their eyes and ears of the land, and you know, I'm on the end of the chain and telling you and everybody what's happening. That if the police told them they're on World Heritage, that's not World Heritage. Goldsborough Valley might be,
yes. But
in Gordonwell is not World Heritage. And this United Nations thing saying you cannot move. I haven't got that paper here. I've read it out before. Mm. You can't move from country. And, you know, I mean, the council created this by blocking the road access to the river, which is your right to be on country. That's, they might be harmless, but in some people's eyes, but in their way, there's no peace in the valley with problems. And so they living as close as they can on the river, they're yes. catching fish and living their life. Their Murrays, you can't take the river out of the Murrays, you know, that's their identity. And so the police have got it wrong, and I've been told by a few people, it's sort of a big thing where everybody's waiting to see what happens if they're going to move them.
And they have moved them.
Well, they were supposed to have been moved this morning, and they were told if they didn't move, they were going to get a $3,000 fine for camping. They're just living, you know. They're just existing. And
then you've got non-Indigenous people there turning up in their classy caravans and, you know, their home vehicles. And they're let us stay there, aren't they?
Yeah, well, you know, if they get rid of them two, they're the last two. There's no one there because it's just closed. I mean, they closed the whole river, getting ready, I think, for this, whatever they're going to take the water of the Mulgrave River.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know what the Adinkra government's doing, because this is all Adinkra country, and Capnic too, the Cairns and Far North Environment Centre need to get involved in what they're going to do to take this thing out of the river.
Yes.
There's something else I want to add on that I've kept quiet for a long time that I was aware of, that relation of the wife involved. Curtis Pitt, our member of Mulgrave, Aboriginal wife, well, they've bust up. And people should know with politicians, but people have the idea that since that, he might want to punish the Murrays even more, you know, because directed police. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that's big news, and I was told he wanted to keep it quiet, but it's a big thing in politics. And if...
Well, he could have got voted in because he's a family man. Well,
he could
not
have been.
The case now, is what you're saying.
And I said a long time ago on the radio, how his family, it's stuff you don't want to say because it puts me in danger and all kind of things. But this town is terrible. Welcome to Mississippi, you know. They're Murrays. You can't just ethnically cleanse the hog, but that's what they're trying to do. Mm. They don't want Murrays down the river because the rest area and the camping ground, it's an insult to all the Murrays. They've laid all this on for everybody, and it's been shut till May. They use the facilities down there. There's always been a toilet. They tell me the water comes up a little bit, doesn't even cover the place, and the council roars down and shuts the toilets, the shower block. And it's so tormenting.
Yeah.
It's the green patch. They don't want to be moved.
And like I said, it is their country, and so we were talking about native title, land claims, what have you. But we as First Nation people, we're connected to land, you know, and if Goldsborough is their tribal land, why question it? Why hunt them off, as we're saying, as we're yarning here? It is devastating. It breaks the heart, doesn't it?
Yeah, mate, it's all the Mulgrave River. And, you know, white man draw these lines all over the place. You know, the river's the highway. It goes from Gordon Vale upstream, goes to Goldsborough. There's already problems because the Goldsborough Corporation is in Gordon Vale. And the Gordon Vale TOs, which are all Adinkra but different to the Goldsborough upriver, people that have, well, the Adinkra doesn't really have its own part of the corporation, because once it was the Adinkra Corporation, and now it's Doolabed or Mullumbarra Edingee Corporation. There's no actual just Edingee on their own.
Mm.
So they made two corporate identities, and the pure true blue Edingee, what we call, have been hunted out from nearly just about emptied out from the corporation in Gordonvale that are making decisions around Gordonvale. And I said before, the problem is that that's not their, the corporation that exists in Gordonvale is not their area of responsibility. Their area of responsibility is upriver, and the TOs in town don't even know why they've got their office on our country. Yeah. Oh, it's complicated. But we've got really basically, Murray got nothing, you know. They've got nothing. One mob up
exactly.
One mob up the river got a freehold block, and we think they got that, where they can live. We think they got that for signing the land away as a, for being puppets, you know.
Mm.
And so, you know, like the voice mate, I look at it, they have all this and organise everybody in the working groups and talk to this and they stall and they think, and in the end they get nothing. And the voice, I heard this Albanese earlier in the year saying, oh, well, they could just give it to them anyway, even without the referendum. And sometimes you hear things on the news late night, I think, and then they sort of censor it and you don't hear that anymore.
Yeah.
But I did hear that. And I think that it's just, what's being done is to just, because everybody should have a voice, they should say, yeah, we don't want to go from under the river, and that's enough, you know?
Exactly.
Anyway, I'm just, said I'd go on today for them,
Bella. All right, my brother. Well, thank you for sharing, and yeah, good luck with the brothers there, and prayers and thoughts are going out to the brothers there on Mulgrave who may be asked to move today from their country, but feel their pain, of course.
Yeah, well, they haven't got $3,000, mate.
Well, and exactly. And it
is not World Heritage in Gouldenvale, and they're going to destroy that river.
It's TO land, brother. It's TO land.
Yeah, it's your dingy land, and something needs to be done to help save this river, because you've seen all the fish kills we had it last year. They're going to lower the river, and they're talking about damming it. They're keeping watch, you know. They're, all right.
Thank you, my brother.
Point.
All the best, Tony. That's Tony Gibbs there having his say. Yarn Up Strong here on National Talk Black. Deadly number here, 1-800-422-416. Yarn Up Strong here, National Talk Black. It's a one-hour program. Your host, the bully one, Trevor Tim, 20 Trev Murray from the Curry. And I steer the ship. It is your ship, but have you saying Yarn Up Strong. You can also text a brother, 045-714-0550. And don't forget a Facebook page of BBM987FM. I want to give a big shout-out to a local mob here in Cairns. We do have a meeting today, voice to Parliament here in Cairns, and I believe it's going up and down the state. So looking, I'm going to attend that and hear the yarns and see how people feel about it. So I'll be able to add to the conversation tomorrow regarding that space. But Yarn Up Strong here, National Talk Black. To Deadly Mob.
G'day, you mob. This is Tanya Kernaghan with Trendy Trev, and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now at 1-800-422-416.
Patiently waiting for someone I ain't never seen before to say he's a captain of men, but ain't believing our love. From the land of the white skin, he's self-righteous, a murder without license. With the spear, I'm the nicest, thinking that I might just wait till night hits. Then I move in silence, when the moon at its highest, and my soul is defined. I'm consumed by desire to kill. Any white devil wanna test my will, then he finna get burnt by the fire I feel. Look him in the eye and hold his spirit still. He's hoping I don't catch him, but I know I will.
Standing on the shoreline, Cooperman coming. Might not wanna cross mine, wanna take it from me. Fire in my eye, but we ain't running. Wanna murder, let's ride.
Say that it came in peace, but our blood still stains the beach. Roll the dice, we gon' play for keeps. The sacred place ain't a place to preach.
No, no, no.
No white faith and a black belief.
No, no, no.
Better pray that our spears don't reach. He's cold, white, hot, I'ma make it bleed. Leading to the first fleet, sicker than disease that he bring from overseas. No matter where you flee, I will always be. In the darkest of night, your descendant will see me.
Standing on the shoreline,
Cooperman coming.
Might not wanna cross mine,
wanna take it from me.
Fire in my eye,
but we ain't running.
Wanna murder, let's ride.
Sebastian here, hanging up on our National Talk Black, your big yarning show, CBM 98.7.
I remember the day.
Never intended to be blue. telling me that it's never ever meant to be like this. You plead, forgive me please, won't you hold me tight? No more lonely nights. Lord, whisper your name in my ear.
On your mom, it's me, Bush Tucker Bungie, and you're listening to the National Talk Black program. Makaran.
National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
Yes, a very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, coming to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on your dingy country. That's BBM Bumabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your Sabre calls from that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, healthy food in remote Indigenous communities must be a top priority for Northern Territory Government, health experts say. So with that, we're going to speak to Associate Professor Julie Abrimbancom from Monash University. Julie, very good morning, Professor. How are you?
Yeah, morning, Trevor. I'm well, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity.
Yes, thank you very much for coming to the program. So you're based down in Melbourne?
I'm based out of Melbourne, but I do spend lots of my time up in Darwin. So
okay.
I lived in Darwin for about 25 years, so I'm up in Darwin at the moment. So,
you've got
I'm
a connection. Larrakia land. Okay, lovely,
yeah.
Beautiful. So we're talking about healthy food in remote Indigenous communities. It must be a top priority in for Northern Territory Government. I mean, it should be across the board. But tell us about the situation. A lot of our Aboriginal communities don't have healthy food, and it's very expensive to have healthy food. And here we have chronic disease because of the input.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt that there's a direct link between access to healthy food as well as preventable chronic disease and the high burden of diabetes, kidney disease, heart disease that people in communities are experiencing. But I think there's some really great things that we've seen happening in the Northern Territory with remote community stores. And this is a real policy opportunity with the NP government at the moment to put... Trevor, hang on. I'm feeling a bit nervous about this. Do you mind? Can we start again? I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all good. Yeah, no dramas. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, hang on.
Yeah, to our daily listeners, Trinity Trev here, Murray from the Curry National Talk Blair, having a very important yarn with Associate Professor Julie Brimblecombe from Monash University and talking about healthy food in remote Indigenous communities must be a top priority for Northern Territory Government. Health experts say so, which is so so obvious in regards to our health and in regard to the chronic diseases, as Professor Julie did mention. Are you there, Professor?
Yes. I'm here. Sorry.
So we still have a long way to go, don't we, in regard to, healthy living, healthy lifestyle for Aboriginal communities, yes?
Yes, exactly. So in the Northern Territory here, the Northern Territory government has taken over the store licensing from the Commonwealth government. So, so this means that stores have to promote healthy food and make sure that healthy, affordable food is available to their customers. One thing, we've actually formed a coalition in the NT to really advocate to the government to also put in place restrictions in stores for the promotion and placement of unhealthy food, because what we often find is that retailers will put the unhealthy food in very highly visible areas within stores and promote it. You know, so, for example, if we get to the checkouts, we've all experienced the buy one, get one free, you know.
Exactly. All the promotional discounts, yes.
Exactly. So, and store directors in... So there's been a lot of leadership from remote communities around... the issue of, you know, too much sugar being consumed in remote communities, you know, because of the easy availability and the affordability of those types of foods.
Professor, so, you say affordability because that's so true. It seems like fast food is more cheaper than healthy food, and we need to change that pricing if that's the case.
Definitely, you know, healthy food needs to be made affordable to people. You know, we found in the Northern Territory here, the government for about 20 years has actually been monitoring the cost of food, the price of food in remote communities, and there's a 60% price differential between the cost of food in remote communities to the urban supermarket. So, you know, this is not new information. Everybody knows about this price differential. Mm. And we found in the Northern Territory that stores are, you know, many of the stores are doing what they can to try to make food affordable to communities. But this is where we really believe that corporations, the suppliers, food manufacturers, as well as government really need to step in here and give a leg up to remote stores to be able to make sure that they can provide an affordable food supply to customers. You know, often the blame gets put on the source.
Mm.
But, you know, these are essential services.
Of course.
In remote communities, you know, they're operating under very challenging conditions, as
yes.
what we see happening at the moment with the floods. You know, there's great distances that food has to travel to get out to communities, and often there's not the good infrastructure, you know, to be able to have good, reliable transportation of food to
exactly.
communities. And so, you know, it puts the price up. And this is where, you know, we've got the highest burden of disease experienced by people in remote communities, families having, you know, to leave their communities for treatment, and yet being able to improve diet through improving the cost of healthy food could make an enormous difference.
Well, exactly. And the government needs to come to the table in regarding pricing because that's the astronomical situation, and it causes the unhealthy living of our people in communities.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And, you know, this is not new. Like, we've you know, not just academics, but leaders in communities, customers themselves, you know, have been advocating and talking about the high cost of living, the high cost of food in remote communities. And as soon as anybody mentions the word subsidy, you know, it's like the government turns a deaf ear to the problem. But I do think that what we need is an investigation into how can we actually reduce the cost of food in remote communities. And there needs to be political commitment. Obviously,
yes.
it's not just the responsibility of the government. Like I said before, it's about, I think, the manufacturers, the corporates, you know, can be involved here. But, you know, working with communities and leaders in communities to help find a solution to a very entrenched problem now, which shouldn't be a problem in a high-income
And Professor,
country.
We're talking about a team effort here. We're talking about a coalition of healthy organisations. When you're talking about the Heart Foundation, Diabetes
yes.
Australia,
yes.
Obesity
yes.
Policy yes. Coalition,
yes.
Coalition.
Yes.
It's a
yes.
team effort, isn't it?
Yes, exactly, exactly. This coalition, I think it's awesome that's been formed. It's certainly getting a lot of traction, and it just makes it helps us to have an amplified voice, you know, to advocate with Indigenous peoples, with Indigenous leaders, you know, to help address some of these problems which just shouldn't exist when it comes to food security and food supply and food affordability in remote communities. So the key ask to government at the moment from this coalition is to include in their store licensing the restriction on the promotion and placement of unhealthy foods, you know, because this is, like you said right at the beginning of this talkback, is that this is policy that should be happening right across Australia. But what this coalition is doing is getting behind the store directors, the Aboriginal store directors in remote communities here in the Northern Territory,
yes.
to advocate the government for a level playing field so that all stores are putting restrictions in place on the promotion and placement of unhealthy food, because some store directors are putting these good policies in place. Like, for example,
yes.
you walk into some of these stores, they don't have confectionery at the counter. They've got the unhealthy drinks at the back of the store and the water at the front of the store. Like, this is amazing that remote stores are leading.
And should be templated across the country.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
And I'm just saying, in regard to a five-year-old or six-year-old looking at a can of Coke, and it's got no sugar written on it, you know, psychologically, it's still a Coke, and they will purchase it and drink that, and would rather them drink that than a Coca-Cola with sugar in it.
Yes, exactly.
So
and
we should police that.
Yes, exactly. The large-size Coca-Colas, for example, or any of those large-size sugary drinks, like the 1.25 litres, they've got 26 teaspoons of sugar in them.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a young person, you're not going to think about that, but you're being conditioned to that sweet taste. And so, you know, that becomes a preference. And then that you have children, that they're the kind of, you know, dietary habits that you then model to your children. And so what we found with our research, and this is research that has actually been done in partnership with store directors, particularly with the Arnhem Land Progress Aboriginal Corporation, is that if you don't have those unhealthy foods, like the sugary drinks at the front of the store, you reduce the proportion of unhealthy drinks to healthy drinks. People actually purchase less of them, you know, because we've all got a tendency to impulse buy when we see those, you know, high sugar, high fat, kind of really tasty, emotionally appealing foods. And so if they're at the counter or in high-end places, we're likely to purchase those.
And that's the promotional the promotion of sugary food. So we can do the same concept for healthy food.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, so we're not about taking away choice, you know, because that's really important to customers, you know, that they can make a choice.
Yes.
You know, or we all like to have chocolate or soft drinks or, you know, those types of foods at some time. But this is about making the healthier choice more visible for customers and making it more affordable for customers as well. So at the moment, we've got retailers making the choice for customers to put the unhealthy food in highly visible areas. So, you know, there's no reason why that can't be reversed. And the healthy foods be the ones that are promoted. So the United Kingdom has actually put this legislation in place as of October last year. And it was actually evidence from the Northern Territory that helped inform that legislation in the UK. So we're saying, you know, if the UK government can do it based
on... we can do it here in this country on the big island. Look, a very important conversation. Thank you so very much. Of course, the program is a national program going across the country. All our First Nation radio stations and Indigenous communities are listening. Governments are listening. So a very important yarn. And thank you for your input, Associate Professor Julie. We'll be in touch. You take care and keep smiling.
Yeah, Trevor, thank you so much for the opportunity.
And you did well, sister. You did well. You did well, sister.
Oh, thank you. I got so nervous at the beginning. My hands were shaking. I don't know what happened.
You got this.
Yeah, and then I thought, oh, maybe this is live.
It's all good, my sister. You take care and all the best, eh?
Oh, Trevor. Oh, thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. You don't say I'm